Let's Face the Issues is a daily broadcast ministry of First Conservative Baptist Church with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. Dr. Youngblood is also the founder, president of Conservative Theological University. Let's Face the Issues broadcast deals with real issues facing our culture today from a biblical perspective. God created three institutions, the home, government, and the church. Therefore, any issue that is harmful or has a negative impact on either of these institutions will be carefully dealt with and confronted from a biblical worldview. Too often, good people are afraid to confront serious issues that are attacking the church, the home, and Christians. We must stand against the enemies of the family and the church. Tune in each day for another broadcast of Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. Here is Dr. Youngblood with Let's Face the Issues.
Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us today on Let's Face the Issues. We're delighted to have you at the beginning of this brand new week. Looking forward to what God is going to do in your heart and life during this week as we depend upon Him as we face the issues. Jesus said to His disciples in John 8, 31 and 32, "If you continue in My word, then you're My disciples indeed." But He says, first of all, "If you continue in My word, then you're My disciples indeed, and ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." Freedom, biblically speaking, is when we know the truth. And yet we find multitudes today, ladies and gentlemen, that are not seeking the truth, not interested in the truth. They're interested in simply their own facts as they see them. We see that with the legislator that's out of New York that all of a sudden wants to turn us into a socialist nation. And she sees the facts only as she sees them and the issues that she, as she sees them and as she deems them to be. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, just for your own edification, we're not covering that subject today, but Bernie Sanders, back as far as 1968, has been an advocate for USSR Russian communism, for socialism. And he and his wife got married. They did their honeymoon in Cuba. He's visited the communist regime in Russia several times. In fact, just 2 years ago, he was advocating for the Venezuelan-style socialist organizational structure, and said that it would be wonderful for America to emulate that. He's wanting to run from his words now. But ladies and gentlemen, we need to recognize we are in a serious condition in America today. In fact, the scripture is very, very poignant when it talks about that in Psalms chapter 11, verse 3. "If the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do?" And so, ladies and gentlemen, this is the reason I'm such an advocate for the preservation of our foundations and not the destruction of our foundations, because the question that is asked there in that verse in Psalms 11:3 is very poignant and very personal. We need to recognize that we're in high harm's way and danger if we as Christians remain silent and do nothing. But ladies and gentlemen, we do have an opportunity to do something. We have an opportunity to speak and let our voices be heard, but it is only through the election process. A lot of people today that have made the determination that I can do nothing about it, my vote doesn't count, one vote doesn't count. Back a few years ago, we had a legislator in the House of Representatives in Tallahassee that was elected by two votes. I sat in his office on the day that he was sworn in and had coffee and refreshments with him, and I reminded him that those two votes came from me and my wife. And he said, "You'd be surprised how many people tell me that their two votes did the same thing." But the simple point that I make is a single vote counts. And so we need to be aware that on March the 19th, that's just a few weeks away. In fact, early voting starts on March the 5th. That's next week. And on March the 19th is the primary. We have what's called a unitary form of primary. That is, Democrats and Republicans all vote in the same primary. But our primary is on March the 19th. And it is incumbent upon us as Christians, it is imperative that we as conservatives get out to vote. But the question that I want to deal with today gets into the aspect of the elections in our city, elections for city council and for our mayor and other sworn offices in our city. But I want us to think on the question, is crime a disease? Is crime a disease? Now, before you hastily answer that question, let me remind you that you can dial 401-1413. 904-401-1413 gets you straight through to the studios and right to our microphones. We can have the dialogue and discussion together. After our monologue, I'm going to introduce our special guest today. He's running for a city council seat. We'll tell you a little more about it in a moment. But the question that I'm wanting to answer, to ask and to answer during this broadcast is crime a disease? We're all familiar with the some of these myths about crime, that gun violence and the fact that if we can just control guns and ban guns or infringe on our Second Amendment rights, that somehow, some way can reach the utopian level and we'd have no crimes, no shootings, no murders, no guns. But the question begs to be asked and answered, is that so? Well, back in the 1980s, in fact, it was about 1982, Chicago, Illinois banned the right to keep and bear arms in Chicago. The question begs to be asked, ladies and gentlemen, did that stop the shootings? Did that stop the drive-by murders? Did that stop the, did it decrease the shootings and the murder rate in the state of Chicago, in the city of Chicago? The answer to that is no. In fact, those numbers have only skyrocketed in the past number of years. From 2018, just for the year 2018, Chicago had over 3,000 people shot, 550 people murdered in gun activities, that is by murder by way of guns, that is with gangs in the city of Chicago, drug wars and home invasions, armed robberies, and drive-by shootings. All of that, ladies and gentlemen, in a city that guns have been out and out banned. If you're a citizen in Chicago, United States citizen in Chicago, your Second Amendment rights have not only been infringed upon, they have been literally taken away. And yet we have gangsters with guns. Ladies and gentlemen, the main thing that we need to recognize is that you can outlaw every gun in America and prevent sane citizens, careful, law-abiding citizens from having a weapon, and only those that are illegally gotten, only those that are the drive-by shooters, the murderers, the gangbangers, as they're called, only those will have the weapons, and it will put every life in danger. It's almost laughable, if it's not sad, that right here in Jacksonville, ladies and gentlemen, our city leaders are now engaging in and trying to engage, hire, or contract with a group out of Chicago to stop crime in Jacksonville. Now, ponder and think on that for a minute now. They're out of Chicago. They say that they've got the answer to crime in Jacksonville and that they can stop crime in Jacksonville. It's not going to cost the taxpayers, but the threshold of beginning between $1.5 million and $2 million for them to be contracted to come in and show us how to stop crime in the city of Jacksonville. Ladies and gentlemen, here's an article that I'll just read you a blurb on that. It says, Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry moves forward with the Cure Violence crime-fighting program. The article reads, the organization claims its model of treating violent crime as only a disease. I'm going to pause and ponder for that for a moment. That crime is only a disease. Yes, they're right, partially. It's a disease of the heart. It's not a disease that you'd get smallpox, measles, or any flu or cold. That's not type disease. And they say that it will reduce shootings and murders in the city of Jacksonville. Dateline Jacksonville, Florida, Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry has decided to push ahead with the Cure Violence, a crime-fighting program that got its start in Chicago. Curry's chief of staff, Brian Hughes, released a statement saying, let me read you Brian Hughes' statement. Quote, they will give us the assessment report and proposal within 30 days, but based on their record of success and the now, let me just pause for a moment. It has a dismal record of so-called success. Dismal. And when they were kicked out of Chicago's program of curing crime and preventing crime, they claimed that it was because the budget was reduced. No, it was because they ceased to fund a worthless program. Let me continue. He says, and I'm reading a quote from Brian Hughes, Mayor Curry is committed to move forward. The community response has been very productive and is clear there's already a high degree of approval across a wide section of stakeholders. I want you to tell me who those stakeholders are. Next step will be to research funding avenues and turn the proposal into a formal scope of work. With that in mind, it's expected the program would be deployed before the summer. Further in the article, it says, the national organization has been trying to convince city leaders to spend $1.5 million over a 3-year period of time. The organization claims its model of treating violent crime as a disease will reduce shootings and murders in Jacksonville, Florida. Cure Violence, that's the name of the organization, says its program contributed to a 56% reduction in killings in Baltimore and 64% drop in shootings in New York City. Ladies and gentlemen, if that is so, I want somebody to show me the statistical data, because in both those cities, crime has exponentially increased, skyrocketed, just as in Chicago, their home base. It's obvious it's not worked in Chicago. Their claim is that the program in Chicago, the West Garfield Park area, saw a 67% reduction in violent crime, according to the Reverend Marshall Hatch, who helped launch it. The program died within a few years because of tensions between the law enforcement community leaders, according to Hatch. Ladies and gentlemen, when you go online and do the research, that is simply not what took place. But we're buying it in the city of Jacksonville, and we, the taxpayers, will pay the load for it, and it will be a hoax, if you will, perpetrated on our city. Here's an article very similar to that, Community Cautiously Optimistic, about Cure Violence, the crime-fighting program out of Chicago. Treating violence as an infectious disease sounds good on paper. It's worked in other cities, but Jacksonville families are very cautious. And ladies and gentlemen, I think we should be. Simply to put, the article says, the work they do in training local leaders to intervene with people at risk, communities at risk, and violent crime. They also respond to very simple shootings. They will respond to a single simple shooting and counsel victims and their families to prevent retaliation in the killings. Community leaders like Dana Miller are excited but cautious. Quote, I just pray that this program doesn't drop the ball, Miller said, that they are true to what they are saying and that they are here to help our community, not just for political reasons or for financial reasons to line their pockets with money, end quote. Now, that should be the question that we ask. But how are we going to say, well, I'm praying that it works? They supposedly have the empirical evidence that it works. How should you then say, well, we're sure praying that these guys come in, they can wave a magic wand and make it work? Ladies and gentlemen, it doesn't work that way. The JSO said in June the 8th of 2018, that we have at least 30 gangs operating in Jacksonville, Florida. There are at least 30 gangs, this article says, operating in our city, and the only survivor in Tuesday's evening's quadruple shooting is a member of one of them, according to the City of Jacksonville Sheriff's Office. The Bullard brothers began with promising lives, and no one knows why, according to the police, they chose to be in the gang. But the sheriff's office and others say many gangs operating all over the city, mostly on the west side, north side, and east side. Pause, ponder that for a moment. West side, north side, and east side. That's almost all of the city. That's 3/4 of the city. Quote, they usually grow from neighborhood groups and hang out together. And the young men just joined the gangs because they want to do something. Ladies and gentlemen, in this article, it further states, and may I caution us to listen carefully, it says we need to pay close attention to our sons and daughters. That is the warning for parents and how we could help our children in Jackson. We really need to listen to our children much more carefully as parents, but also as community leaders. Now, ladies and gentlemen, one of the things that's totally missing in what we're talking about as far as curing violence and curing crime in Jacksonville, Florida, is the absence of anything about prayer, absence about anything about the need for revival in our city, the absence of anything about any focus on school having the opportunity to teach Bible. We're totally absent and devoid on anything that has the moral, ethical, biblical, spiritual, fundamental foundation for directing the children in our city. Yes, we fund Jasmine Club over on the west side that promotes sodomite lifestyle and homosexual living and the transition stage from male to female to female to male for the teenagers that's found on the streets, paid for by taxpayer money, $50,000 to $100,000 a year being paid out of the coffers of the city taxpayers, but yet we are not willing to fund something that will assist in the spiritual, moral, ethical values of our kids. ladies and gentlemen, you're not going to stop the shootings in our city until you find something and a willingness to focus on the recognition of the fact that we need to do something about the morals and the ethics and the values in our city. Citywide, there needs to be an advocacy for prayer meetings. Citywide, there needs to be an advocacy for turning back to God and a revival in our city. Contrarywise, our city council and mayor seems to be bent on special interest groups like the Sodomite Special Interest, the HRO. Jacksonville may have godly leaders, but if they are, they are hidden in the closet. Ladies and gentlemen, we need to put godly men in office to lead our city, in the mayor's office, in the city council office, and every other elected position in our city. It's why we are so prone to recognize and recommend city council candidates that honor God, that are unabashedly, unashamedly Christians. And that's the reason we have on our microphones today in our studio here, Don Redmond. Don is a city council candidate for Group 4 at large for the city council. Don invested 8 years of his life previously on the city council, and I'm thankful to have him with us today. Don, welcome to Let's Face the Issues.
Thank you, Dr. Youngblood. Thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Well, you've heard my monologue, Don. What was wrong with what I said?
Nothing. There's a lot of things wrong with ideas in with the city that our leaders are now coming up with. This group from Chicago, it's ridiculous to think that they are going to have some magic potion that is going to cure the problem. We are wasting a lot of money reaching out to a city whose crime-ridden problems outweigh ours.
Yes.
That doesn't make sense at all.
Doesn't make sense at all. And yet on their website, they list five things, and I'm not going to take our listeners' time and our radio time today to go down them, but from their website, it says five required components to cure violence. And they talk about to potentially determine what's going to happen, when it's going to happen, so you can prevent it from happening. It sounds like a magical, mystical wand that they're able to wave and get it done. I believe we have a caller on the phone. Go ahead with the question or comment, please.
Yes, thank you very much. I'm thinking that we are the nation, our nation is in such a serious situation, and I'm not getting the impression that we are recognizing it as a nation, how serious our situation is. And as Jacksonville, as a city, our city, in very serious situation, imagine actually on par with what is happening in Chicago, and we are treating it so lightly. I'm getting that we in no way are we waking up to realize how serious our situation is. I quite agree with the thing that was you mentioned as we're sadly lacking in right now, and the one of the main things that I have in my mind has sadly lacking is the voice of the church. Where is the church's input in the condition in the nation, in America, in the nation, and in the city Jacksonville? All the churches around, so many, and where is their input? Why the church stay in the background and leave the problem to the policymakers and so on? Why is it just like how you are speaking out as a pastor of one group? Your voice should be a representative voice of the churches in the city. In other words, why can't Jacksonville have a church representative? A church body, a representative body, to speak for the church, and this everybody is ready to listen to the voice of the church. If the church would wake up and do something, all the churches just sit back and doing nothing at all, and we are losing our city.
You make a comment so clearly and so poignantly correct, and that is the fact that so many of the pastors are silent. And I've said for many, many years, and I do not get accolades from pastors for saying this, most pastors are fearful of numbers, nickels,
That's
and
right.
noses. They're fearful if they take a stand, they might get fired. And I say to people, if you can fire me, then I'm simply a hireling, And as a hireling, when danger comes, I'm going to run. And that's exactly what we see taking place. But your comments are very well taken. This is the reason I'm advocating for, at this election cycle, that we put Christian men in office. But thank you so much for your call. Be blessed today as you serve the Lord. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about the question, is crime a disease? We have with us on the microphone today Don Redmond, which is the council candidate for Group 4 at large. And at large means, Don, you're running across the city.
Citywide.
Not just for a city district or a particular section, but citywide. Tell our listeners how they can help. Give us numbers and contacts. I want to see all of our listeners call you and say, Don, I want a sign in my front yard. Don, I want to help. Don, I want to write you a check. Don, I want to see your like. Tell our listeners how they can do that.
Well, those are all the things that I need help with. My phone number, 904-626-9307. Go on the website, voteforDonRedmond.com. And find out more about me. But yes, I need people that would call me and say, hey, bring a sign, put it in my yard. I need money. I'm running against somebody that is funded by the same people that funded the HRO, the homosexual movement. And they are putting a lot of money into his campaign.
Yes, Don, in fact, if I could interrupt, and I'm looking at your chief opponent's mm-hmm. card. I'm not going to give him the benefit of even calling his name. But he lists a litany of those that are endorsing him. And all of them, without any exception, are part of the good old boys club in our city. They're part of the power brokers. They're part of the Chamber of Commerce advocates that the chamber this year has decided that they're going to control 10 seats on the city council. So when they want something passed, they'll have a block vote, 10 out of the 19. So, Don, what you're saying is you have an opponent that is simply part of the club, part of the power brokers club in our city, that's advocated in the past for the sodomite lifestyle, the sodomite bill of rights, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And for those that are not aware of that, ladies and gentlemen, it's HRO, Human Reprobate Ordinance. That's what the Bible calls it, but they call it the Human Rights Ordinance, where it places Christian businessmen and Christian businesses in jeopardy if they disallow a sodomite to come in and use the ladies' restroom or the dressing room or locker room, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It has put every business, Christian businessman, in jeopardy. And this opponent of Don Redmond's, his chief opponent in the council race for Group 4, is an advocate for everything that a Christian stands against, and yet he claims to be a Christian. Well, Don, I am thankful that you're running because that gives us, we the people, an option. Tell us, Don, we've got some time left, and I want us to cover some things that I think are so important. We have in our city a major, major problem with crime, and yet we're not addressing the key component to the instigation of all the drugs, all of the gangs and all of the crime, and that is drugs. Tell us, Brother Don, in relationship to that, drugs are being advocated today simply because it goes back to the 2016 referendum to put medical marijuana across the state of Florida. And yet in the city of Jacksonville, we have pot shops popping up near schools, near churches, on just about every street corner. Don, when you're elected city councilman, would you make a commitment to our people, to our listeners today, that you will introduce legislation to limit the number of pot shops in the city of Jacksonville?
I certainly would. I'll make that commitment to limit the number of pot shops, to limit where they could be located. We do not need these in where children will be walking by them going to school. We do not need them in any place that would influence young people in their direction. I serve as the chairman of a school advisory committee at a local high school here and all the feeder schools in that. And talking with the principal of this high school just a few weeks ago, she told me that since they legalized the medical marijuana, the pot issue with children in high school has really become a problem. I mean, they're getting it from their parents who and they bring the parents in to talk to them. And the parents say, well, I didn't know my child was smoking my pot. You know, it has created a problem already, and it's only going to get worse. So we don't need this to infiltrate every area where It shouldn't be close to our churches. It shouldn't be close to our schools or any place where children play, congregate, or have a, you know, I wish we didn't have it. I mean, we've opened up a Pandora's box, but we have to have it controlled.
Have to deal with it. It's already been introduced. It's already law, and so therefore we need to do something about it. Don, there's another hot button issue that most politicians are not willing to talk about. And by the way, this thing now about bringing in this group out of Chicago to set up some kind of special, wave some kind of special wand to stop crime in Jacksonville. They can't stop it in Chicago. That's only happening because we're in an election cycle. That's only happening because we've got a mayoral race.
That's
nothing was said about the need to do this in previous months and the past few years. But Don, there's another issue that I've done some investigation and some interviewing on this subject, and that is we have school patrol, that is school police, in Duval County. It's separate from JSO. It's school police. And it's my understanding that the school police, in their operational scenario, they do not arrest anybody. They do not list anything as a high crime. Kids can go to school today in Duval County with pot in the pocket, with marijuana, with other drugs, and it's listed simply as a school infraction. JSO is not called. JSO is not called to write up a report, to handcuff them, to haul them off. They're keeping it so that it will look like schools have low crimes. When you are elected as city councilman, would you be willing to introduce a bill? It may or may not get traction. You may or may not have others that will sponsor or co-sponsor. But would you introduce legislation in Duval County that will remove the school police and put JSO, an authorized police officer, in charge of the school safeties in Jacksonville, Florida?
Yes, I mean, I have firsthand information from the principals of these schools that they are handicapped because they're so-called police. School police cannot do their job. They have to call the police to come in if they have an arrest or if they have something, an infraction is so bad that they can't handle it there.
You have to almost commit murder in the high schools today to have the JSO to come in and arrest you, though.
That's right. And, I mean, we had the JSO in our schools, in our high schools, up until just a few years ago, and superintendent of schools at that time decided that they could do it cheaper by hiring their own, didn't have to hire the police. So that happened. And then, yes, I would support legislation or propose legislation to change it to where we have
the school
protecting our children at school.
That's the only way it's possible.
We need the best protection.
In fact, ladies and gentlemen, I am told by authoritative sources that we have some high schoolers today, 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade, that's 19, 20, 21 years of age, and they're staying in school simply so they can peddle their dope, their drugs, their pot. And nothing is being done about it. And you wonder why the crime is so high. You wonder why the gangbangers are so prevalent. You wonder why that's taking place. We've got to get it under control. And part of that control, Don, I believe, is having Bible back in the classroom. As you know, the bill's been introduced in Tallahassee by Mike Hill from District 1 in coming out of West Florida, House Bill 195, to put Bible back in the classroom. Mm-hmm. Would you be an advocate, and I realize that if that's done on the state level, but you'd still have time going in as a freshman in the city council to introduce legislation advocating with either a bill or resolution saying that we the people, we the city council, stand behind that bill to put Bible in the classroom?
Yes, I would support legislation to support that. Yes, I think it's we've turned away from God. We took God out of the schools, and he didn't leave us. We left him. And that is, we have children in school that don't go to church. You can ask a group of kids today what a pastor is, and it's amazing how many of them won't have a clue what a pastor of a church is.
That's
or
right.
What they don't go. And they don't have any morals. If they don't,
no morals, no ethics, no values,
no Bible,
because there's not anything
no
called
God,
at home.
You got no morals.
That's right. So we need Bible in the classroom. Don, take the next 30 seconds, wrap up this broadcast. And ladies and gentlemen, we're listening to Don Redmond. Don is running for City Council Group 4 at large, and he's talking about introducing legislation that will protect or limit the pot shops in the city of Jacksonville, that will advocate for Bible back in the classroom. He is willing to take the city, the school police, and replace them with JSO authorized police officers that we can stop crime at the budding point in our schools to stop stop this rampant crime with the gangs. Don, tell the people again what you need. They need signs in the yards. Tell them how they can get the signs, how they can contact you, and by all means, to vote for Don Redman.
I need signs in the yards anywhere in Duval County. This is a citywide race at large. I have a business and my campaign headquarters on Belfort Road in the Southside area, 2760 Belfort Road. You can call me at 904-626-9307, and I or somebody I designate will bring a sign to you and put it in your yard. Go to my website, voteforDonRedman.com, and you can find out more information and contact information about me.
Very good. Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us on Let's Face the Issues. Looking forward to meeting you tomorrow as, once again, we face the issues.
You have been listening to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, located just 1 mile south of I-295. You are invited to worship with them 9:30 a.m. Sunday for Bible study, 10:45 a.m. Sunday morning worship service, 7 p.m. Sunday evening worship service, or 7 p.m. Wednesday fellowship meal, Bible study, prayer, Bible Q&A, and updates on issues facing our city, state, and country. Tune in again for another Let's Face the Issues broadcast. Also tune in this same station Saturday mornings at 9 for expository Bible preaching by Dr. Youngblood. Remember, a rebroadcast of this program can be heard every evening, 9 p.m. on AM 1600 and 100.3 FM. Tune in and invite others to listen.